From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of July 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson. She's in Champaign, Illinois. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group is away today. In agricultural news, Secretary of Ag Vilsack has sent a letter urging Congress to pass comprehensive energy legislation this year, and it was a doozy in support of biofuels. And a congressional panel has voted to open trade and travel to Cuba. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau, and we'll take some extra time to talk with the president of Pioneer Hybrid Seeds. It's a DuPont company. We'll start it in this half hour and then continue on during the Farming World, or the second half hour of our program. And it will all make up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby July wheat at $4.84, up 19 and a quarter cents. In Kansas City, July at $5.01, up 15. July corn futures back in Chicago, $3.65 and a half, 11 and a quarter higher. September, $3.73 and one quarter, up 10 and a half cents. December, $3.84 and a half, 11 higher in the March contract from the corn pit. $3.96 and three quarters, up 10 and one quarter. May futures, $4.04 and three quarters, up 10 cents. Soybeans, July contract, $9.53 and a half, 5 cents higher. August up six at $9.37. September beans at $9.15 and a half, 3 and a half higher. And November contract at $9.05 and a half. Finished the day, 3 cents higher. January beans at $9.15, up 2 and three quarters. July bean meal at $2.91.50, up 2.10. July oil at $35.87. Down 41. August live cattle futures at 89.90, down 12 and a half. The feeders at 112.57 and a half, down 47 and a half cents. And July lean hog futures unchanged at $79.22 and a half cents on this Thursday afternoon. You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. It is a production of the University of Illinois here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. In just a few moments, Jackie Vakes will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural futures markets. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, nearby August contract, $72.58 a barrel, down $3.06. Ethanol at $1.53 and 3 tenths, that's just about unchanged. Natural gas at $4.82 and 7 tenths, up 21 and a tenth. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.93 and 4 tenths, down 7 and 9 tenths. And the gold contract at $1,206.30 an ounce on a settlement price for the July down $39.20 today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 84 points at 96.89, and the Goldman Sachs on the afternoon at 483.14 is down 12.04 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast is calling for from Drew Lerner. He says mostly dry through Saturday of this week. Mild temperatures and low humidity will continue today. Highs in the 70s and lows in the 80s. Warming likely Friday into the weekend, with highs returning to the 80s and the low 90s. Thunderstorms will develop, says Mr. Lerner, in western Corn Belt during the weekend, reaching Iowa Sunday. Some rainfall will be there, but it'll be highly variable in locations and amounts. Thunderstorms will occur east of the Mississippi River late Sunday into Tuesday. Again, erratic rainfall resulting in a few counties that might report an inch or more, while most areas receive less than half an inch. Some cooling will follow earlier in the week, but readings will not cool off as greatly, of course, as this week. Crop conditions should stay favorable through the next 2 weeks. A more complete look at the weather forecast you can always come up with here at Illinois Public Media and during the Closing Market Report. But today, we will not be joined by Pete Levitt. He's off. And instead, we'll talk with Paul Schickler and have a longer conversation with him. He's the president of Pioneer Hybrids, and that's a DuPont company. And we'll join him for the Farming World early.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On the Closing Market Report, time to check the agricultural futures markets. Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson in Champaign is with us. Good afternoon, Jackie. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Todd. I'm very good. How about you?
I'm doing well. Tell me about the little rally that we had in the marketplace. Corn futures were up, what, 10 to 11 cents? Wheat up 19.
Well, we closed corn futures up 11. We were actually a little higher than that. Both wheat and corn went out there and tried to test the 100-day moving average, actually traded above it, and then didn't manage to finish it out. I think when you look at what's going on here, unfortunately, this rally just really isn't on what I would call rock-solid ground. You know, we're seeing a lot of short covering going on. We haven't seen any new buying come into the corn market. The same thing in the wheat market. And when you look at the fact that corn is going up after having so many people selling it over the last short while, and gold and crude going down, it has to make you believe that some of this money is coming out of the market just to be able to make margin calls over in the Dow. And so that doesn't give us what we would all like to hope for, a market that may not break back down.
Well, where do you think the marketplace is headed then?
Well, I think that tomorrow we'll probably go back up here and test the 100-day again, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see it close down around the 364 area, which is the 50-day moving average on corn, mostly because of the fact that we're going to head into the July 4th weekend, you know, the infamous weekend that normally brings a big change in the marketplace. And so I'd be surprised if we have a lot of people who are willing to really go long into that.
You don't think yesterday really changed the marketplace with the quarterly grain stocks report?
Well, I'd have to say, you know, 39 cents between yesterday and today basically
a
is a pretty big change. You know, can we expect it to do another 39? I don't think we can do that unless we're actually looking at some, you know, major weather. I think, when, you know, you brought up the grain stocks report. That grain stocks report is pretty interesting. My particular, and you know, you and I have talked about this, light test weight corn. I'm going to say that when I look at the usage numbers, they back that up, that we are using a lot more corn for feed and a lot more corn for ethanol just because of the light test weight. I know that, you know, working with guys out in the feedlots in the West, you know, they're so current, and it's primarily because cattle are just not finishing the way that they would like them to as fast. So it's going to be interesting to see the next report and see if we again come in with such a tremendous amount of usage.
And then the next one, of course, the last one for the year, it'll come in September.
That's right. And, you know, at that point in time, everybody will be holding their breath to find out if we're going to use like another 3.3 billion bushels or is it going to drop back down to the 2.6 like we saw last year. But September's still a long ways away. So, you know, I guess I'd have to back it up by saying we know that we haven't increased the cattle crop size, and we know we've actually decreased the nearby hog size. So how can you justify more feed usage?
Jackie, we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
Jackie Vakes is with Stewart Peterson, and she's here in Champaign. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack sent a letter yesterday to Congress members to pass comprehensive energy legislation this year. The U.S. Supreme Court already has cleared the way for the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. However, during his keynote speech at the 25 by 25 National Summit in Washington, D.C., Vilsack said Congress should make that decision. Vilsack said, quote, "Even EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson would rather there be legislative direction than administrative." Just last week, USDA released a report that outlines a plan to move the U.S. to 36 billion gallons of biofuel production by 2022. That includes plans to build new biorefineries in all 50 states. In light of that report, Vilsack said federal lawmakers need to implement policies to spark biofuels production, including reinstating the $1 biodiesel blender's tax credit that expired last December and extending the 45-cent a gallon ethanol blender's tax credit that expires at the end of 2010. A congressional panel voted on Wednesday to lift a decades-old ban on travel to Cuba and remove other hurdles to food sales to the Caribbean island. Supporters hope the 25-20 vote in the House Agriculture Committee will be followed by action this year in the full House and the Senate. Opponents have vowed to use every tool at their disposal to keep the measure from becoming law. Poet, the largest U.S. ethanol maker, has purchased an ethanol plant in Cloverdale, Indiana, that was expected to come online by April 2011 with a production capacity of 90 million gallons a year. The plant is the company's 27th U.S. ethanol facility and will increase Poet's annual ethanol production capacity to about 1.7 billion gallons. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development released a report today saying a fall in agricultural prices last year after steep rises in 2007-2008 drove a slight increase in the share of government aid in farmers' 2009 revenues worldwide. This marked the first increase in producer aid as a share of farm income since 2004, although the long-term trend remained towards a reduction in subsidies. Support to producers amounted to 22% of gross farm income last year, up from 21% in 2008. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. If you have not visited our website, the address is willag.org. You can hear all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and commodity week and everything in between right there on our website for free any time of day or night that you would like at willag.org. Now up next in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkis says farmers have and continue to become more efficient business, environmental, and world citizens.
Farmers have been using more conservation tillage over the past 20 years. Because of this farming practice, they have been able to control and even lower the amount of soil lost to erosion. A new report from the Agriculture Department confirms what farmers already know. Today, farmers are growing more food with fewer resources. The 2010 National Resources Inventory, released by the Agriculture Department's Natural Resources Conservation Service, shows that farmers are careful and caring stewards of natural resources. The report, coupled with the latest USDA productivity figures, confirms the shrinking environmental input of agriculture's efforts to produce food and fiber in the United States. The National Resources Inventory is a compilation of a broad range of 50 years of data related to the environment, land use and productivity, water consumption, and many other factors. Careful analysis of the data quantifies how farm productivity has increased over the past 20 years, while at the same time, environmental performance and water quality have improved. Today's farmers produce more food with fewer resources. Farm productivity has increased dramatically since 1950 with the help of technology, which is always changing in agriculture. For example, in 2008, farmers produced 262% more food with 2% fewer inputs, such as feed, seed, and labor, when compared with 1950. Farmers are feeding more people thanks to the increased productivity on less land. Total U.S. crop yield has increased more than 360% since 1950, while the farmland used for crops has declined by 70 million acres. Careful stewardship by farmers has resulted in a nearly 50% decline in soil erosion caused by wind and water, and soil erosion continues to decline. Farmers are caring for our natural resources while feeding our nation. In fact, we are doing so with greater efficiency more than ever before. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850. In a moment, we'll start the farming world a bit early because we have a great interview with the president of Pioneer, Paul Schickler. This is the Farming World News and Interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk with Paul Schickler. He's the president of Pioneer Hybrid, a DuPont business. Mr. Schickler joins us from just outside of Santiago, Chile. Thank you for joining us and for being with us for a bit today. We do appreciate it. Can you tell me first about your experience in Pioneer? You've been with the company for quite some time.
Yes, Todd. First of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I've been with Pioneer 35 years, started immediately after finishing my undergraduate degree at Drake University in Des Moines, and started in general finance and administrative activities. Over the next number of years, I moved into some logistical areas around our international business in the late 70s as our international business was just starting. After a period of years then, I went back into the finance areas in various departments and geographies in North America. And then in about 1993, was named Vice President for Resource Planning in Pioneer. In 1999, we were acquired by the DuPont Corporation, and at that time I moved into international operations and was responsible for the international operations of Pioneer until 2007 when I was named president.
And why are you in Chile today?
We have extensive operations in Chile. We have, of course, a commercial business where we sell seed to farmers in Chile, but also because of Chile's unique environment and also off-season location, and by off-season I mean off-season from the Northern Hemisphere, we use Chile for research, off-season winter nursery activity so that we can bring products to the market quickly. And then we also have one of the largest seed production facilities in the world, again, to produce seed in the Southern Hemisphere for markets in the Northern Hemisphere.
I suspect that you are in Iowa more than you are in Chile. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, just checking to make sure. So let's talk a little bit about Pioneer Hybrid and some food security issues. What is it that Pioneer is looking at this point? And then we'll have some deeper discussion once you outline some of the topics.
Okay, well, very good. That's a good place to start. First thing that I think people need to understand is that Pioneer Hybrid has been in business for more than 80 years, and our business since day one all the way to today has been to increase the productivity of farmers everywhere in the world. We've done that very successfully, starting from a beginning in Iowa, extending throughout the United States, and now throughout the world. But as you look to the future, I think there are a couple of things that are very well understood and that all of us face as we look out to the years ahead, and that is an increasing population throughout the world, a population that is going to be increasingly urban, and a population that is going to be increasingly growing in some of the developed countries. So if you consider that today we're somewhere around 7 billion people throughout the world, the projections are that by the year 2050, the population of the globe will be 9 billion people. When you combine all those factors, that we're going to have 2 billion more people on the globe, most of those people will be living in urban environments, and most of the additional new people in the globe over the next 30 to 40 years will be growth in developing countries. Combining those factors with the improved economics that we expect the globe to see in the years ahead, resulting in improved diets, people would say that we need to have twice the amount of food production in 2050 as we have today if we're going to support a global population of 9 billion people.
When you take those factors into consideration, how do you put a company like Pioneer in a position to help farmers around the globe produce that much in the way of food and commodities? And can you talk about the differences between those two sorts of things? Because they really are two sorts of different things.
Sure. Yes. Well, as I said, Pioneer's business has been and is increasing the productivity of farmers everywhere in the world. We think that we can make a significant contribution to doubling food production. If you look back at the history in the United States, from the time that hybrid corn was first developed in the 1920s until now, generally productivity has increased at a rate of about 1.5 to 2% per year. We think that with continuing to use enhanced germplasm, continuing to improve the agronomic practices of farmers everywhere in the world, and then by using additional tools like biotechnology, that as we look to the future, we can double that rate of productivity increase. So moving from somewhere around that 1.5 to 2% per year range to 3% per year. And if that is accomplished, we can certainly meet the expectation of doubling food production by the year 2050. Now, you asked the question about, how does commodity food or commodity agricultural production relate to food production? Pioneer develops seed genetics for a number of commodity products, such as corn or maize, as it's called in many parts of the world, soybeans, hybrid rice, sunflower, canola, alfalfa. Those are our main products. Most of those products are produced by farmers as commodities and then sold in markets throughout the world, and ultimately are used in many different forms. But the greatest proportion of usage goes into animal production. That could be animal production for meat, whether it's beef, poultry, or pork, or also into the production for dairy products, milk, also the production of eggs, and so on. So it is a raw material that is used to convert animals into higher content of protein, foods that are in demand as not only the population of the world increases, but the diets of the population also improve.
When you talk about doubling the productivity increase, how much of that do you think is due to the types of things you discussed, the genetics, biogenetics, as opposed to bringing those parts of the world that are producing commodity crops into a world that includes Pioneer and putting Pioneer seeds into those acres as opposed to open pollinated or saved back seeds?
Todd, that's a very good point, because I do believe that we've got great opportunity to improve productivity in areas that are already at the top end of yield production. So areas like the United States, Canada, and Western Europe. And let's put things into simple terms. Generally, in the United States, the average production is about 165 bushels to the acre for corn. Throughout the world, volume and area is measured in metric tons and in hectares. So let's convert the 165 bushels to acre to metric tons per hectare, and the number that I cited, 165 bushels to the acre, would equate to about 10 metric tons per hectare for yield of corn in the United States. That's very consistent in Western Europe, where farming practices and genetics are also utilized at a very high level. But if you go to other places around the world, let's take Brazil as the first example. The national average for Brazil is somewhere around 5 to 6 metric tons per hectare for corn. If you go to Argentina, a little bit higher productivity, about 7 metric tons. In China, which is the second largest corn market in the world, again, you'd be at levels about 6 metric tons per hectare. But then when you move to Africa, an area where, of course, population is growing, where food production and food security is a very, very a need that's in very, very high order, the production there for corn or maize is only at about 3 metric tons per hectare. So you can see that if we can move countries like China and a region like Africa, if we can move their yield levels up significantly and even approach what the U.S. and Europe are now producing, that would go a long way towards meeting the local food requirements in China and in Africa, or increasing the production in countries like Brazil and Argentina, which already play significantly in the export market throughout the world. If we can improve those levels of productivity, there would be more food to move throughout the globe.
What do you think the potential possibility in China? You mentioned that it is the second largest corn-producing nation on the planet. I think their crop size is roughly half of what the U.S. produces. But it's on, as you mentioned already, just about the same number of acres or hectares. How do you manage to bring that level of production up? Is it simply the introduction of better genetics, or do they need to be, or does something else need to happen? Is the farm size too small? Do they need to have different types of cultural practices that would help out in the production of corn and or maize, for instance?
The easy answer to that question is all of the above. So let's take a look at China and compare it to the United States. As you said, in area, the amount of corn produced in China is about the same as the United States. I think this year the United States will have corn planted on somewhere around 90 million acres. As I mentioned, China is the second largest producer of corn, and they'll grow corn somewhere on about 75 million acres. But again, the productivity level is much different. So as you pointed out, Todd, the volume that is produced in China is only half of what it is in the United States, even though their land area is nearly the same as the United States. So how do you bring that productivity up? Again, that's our business, increasing the productivity of farmers. We've been doing research in China for about 15 years. The environment in China, you know, if you just consider the latitude, is very similar to the United States. So the yield potential in China is the equivalent of the United States. Very good growing conditions, very good environmental conditions. But again, the technology level is much different. And when I speak of technology, it means a number of things. Let's first start with the genetics. I think that Pioneer, as well as other countries and companies and the actual institutes in China that do breeding, can make significant improvements in the genetic performance of hybrid corn in China. So you've got the opportunity to increase the foundation of productivity still much further in China. The second factor is improving the quality. I said that we've been doing research in China for about 15 years. We've only been commercialized, actually producing and selling seed in China for about 8 years. But when we entered the market, not only did we bring that improved genetics so that the foundation of productivity is there, but we also brought improved quality, both in purity as well as in germination. So what farmers are able to do is get the most out of their production that genetic potential has through both improved purity and germination. For instance, our seed in China that we sell probably has in excess of 90% germination. That's a much higher rate than what the normal Chinese seed producers provide to growers throughout China. So that is a second very important way to improve productivity, is taking advantage of the genetic improvements and then adding to that improved quality and germination so those genetics can show up in productivity in a farmer's field. But then the third component is improving agronomic practices. So that's ensuring that planting rates, fertility, appropriate use of mechanization, the appropriate use of fungicides and herbicides are all used in a very collective and coordinated fashion so that you are getting maximum productivity out of the seed that's growing in the ground. And then as you look to the future, certainly additional tools like biotechnology can be added to all those components that I just have mentioned, things like herbicide tolerance, insect protection, drought tolerance, and other biotechnology attributes, so that you can build productivity through biotechnology onto the basic foundation of strong genetics, good quality, and improved agronomic practices. So when you combine all those things together, you've got a great opportunity in a country like China to improve productivity from a level now that is much less than what the United States and Western Europe achieves to higher levels of productivity.
This afternoon on The Farming World, we're talking with Paul Schickler. He's the president of Pioneer Hybrid. That's a DuPont business. More with him when we return. You're listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Paul Schickler, the president of Pioneer Hybrid, that's a DuPont business, is on the phone line with us from outside of Santiago, Chile. When we left him, we were talking just a bit about corn production in other places around the globe. You mentioned that in China, germplasm was important. I have two questions, actually, on production in China. Is fertility or fertilization, meaning NPK, an important part of bumping up what hybrids are able to produce in total yield in China? And how far behind might they be, if they are at all, in terms of soil fertility?
Not as far as you might think, Todd. In most cases in China, fertility and soil management is practiced very effectively. And part of the reason for that is that the average farm size in China is about 0.5 hectare, which would be just basically a little bit over an acre. So the farm size is very small, and that enables farmers to manage their area very effectively. So one of the things that they do accomplish better, again, than you might think, is to very much control the soil and fertilization. So as I look to the opportunity in China, I think more is going to come through improved genetics, improved seed quality, and the collective agronomic practices and improving those, including fertility, but not solely fertility, and then ultimately biotechnology. So again, it's not any one area that is deficient. I think you need to look across the entire ag system, whether it's in China, as I've been describing, or in other parts of the world. You need to look at the entire system and see how you can elevate the entire system up to a higher level.
Would a farmer in the Midwest recognize the germplasm that the Chinese producer is using as a hybrid that he might know?
Maybe not the exact hybrid, but I think they'd recognize the germplasm because, again, that's one of the benefits of a company like Pioneer doing business in the United States as well as China, as well as Thailand or Brazil, and that is we can move germplasm around the globe so that we can take advantage of, for instance, in the United States, very high-yielding, high-quality germplasm. We can combine it with tropical germplasm that might have more native resistance to some of the challenges of producing corn in the tropics, like intense disease pressure. You can combine it with other characteristics like combining flint and dent crosses, and even growing in different maturity levels, all the way from maturities in the 70 days to in Europe, all the way to 130-day maturities as you get closer to the equator. So if we can combine all the genetic resources throughout the world and evaluate those crosses and bring to the local market the best product that is suited for that local environment, but using the genetic resources from a global research program, that helps farmers everywhere. It helps farmers in the United States to have access to those genetic backgrounds that otherwise would not be present in the United States, and it helps farmers in China improve their productivity by accessing resources elsewhere.
And finally, because we're here in the Midwest, I would be amiss if I didn't ask you what Pioneer has in the pipeline for producers in Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Indiana, Kansas, Missouri, all those states across the U.S. that produce corn.
Okay. Let's just focus on a couple of the exciting things that we do have, both near-term as well as a little longer in the medium-term for corn and in those states you mentioned also soybeans. For corn, we're very excited about the continued improvements that we've made in insect protection, one of the areas that can rob corn from its yield potential and also is very costly for farmers to deal with. So we have new insect protection traits that are combined into a concept that we call Optimum AcreMax. And what that does is it enables farmers to deal with the refuge requirements for corn rootworm by including the refuge in the bag, so the farmer does not have to plant a separate and different strip refuge for corn rootworm, but instead the refuge is in the bag, and we've also reduced the refuge from the previous 20% to 10%. So two very important improvements, a more convenient refuge practice, as well as a reduction from 20 to 10. That's AcreMax 1. That's in the field this year, 2010, and targeted for the corn rootworm or below-ground insect issues that farmers face. As you look to 2012, we're going to take that same concept, and by that I mean the refuge in the bag so that it's planted consistently throughout the field rather than separately, refuge in the bag combined with a refuge reduction for both corn borer above-ground insects as well as corn rootworm below-ground insects. We expect to have that product, Optum AcreMax 2, in the market in 2012. If you look to soybeans, we have made great progress with improving the productivity of soybeans throughout the United States. In 2009, we introduced a series of elite genetics called Y-Series soybeans, and those products were so successful and in demand by farmers that in the first year that we sold Y-Series soybeans, Y-Series made up about one-third of our sales in 2009. The performance of those beans was very, very strong in 2009. So as we look to this year, about two-thirds of our sales are in Y-Series soybeans, a tremendous growth in sales, but really due to the fact that it's been accepted extremely well by farmers. The next technology that we would look to bring to farmers throughout the United States would be Optimum Get soybeans. And what that does, it combines the glyphosate protection and sulfonylurea protection in Optimum Get with the existing glyphosate protection that's in the market today. And when that is combined, not only do you have better herbicide tolerance, but it also results in a product that yields up to 6% more than the current competitive varieties containing just the Roundup Ready 1 trait. So we're very much excited about that. That's a little bit further out in the future, expecting to be commercialized in about 2014. Then we also have additional work being done to improve drought effectiveness, clearly something that any farmer at any one time throughout the United States faces. We've got some native drought products that are being introduced this year, 2010, and also 2011. But then longer term, there'll be transgenic solutions to drought, and then we're also pursuing very interesting leads in transgenic solutions to make nitrogen utilized more effectively by the corn plant. So when you combine all those opportunities, improving productivity, enabling herbicide tolerance, ensuring that the crop is protected against insects, and then adding to those capabilities drought protection and improved nitrogen utilization, that's a great combination for improving productivity for U.S. farmers for corn and soybeans.
Can we go back to Optimum AcreMax 1 very quickly? I've got a couple of questions on it. First, U.S. EPA gave you a temporary approval for that. It ends this fall, so there are some Optimum AcreMax, I suppose, grow-out acres now on that particular product. I think that the temporary approval, if I remember correctly, has to do with reapproval of Herculex as opposed to the Optimum AcreMax part of that. Is that correct? And will it really be on the shelf next for producers to buy for use next spring?
Yes, this year, 2010, we did receive approval the 1st of May. So Optimum AcreMax 1 is out in very extensive demonstrations with both customers as well as within our sales rep organization. But then, as you say, the Herculex technologies as well as other insect protectant traits are up for re-registration October 2010. So this isn't something that's unique to Optimum AcreMax or unique to Herculex. Many of the insect protection traits in the industry have that renewal coming up in 2010. So once we get to that date with submitting the required data and information, we would expect to have Optimum AcreMax 1 in the market for commercial sales to growers in 2011.
And then about the refuge in the bag at 10%, producers will ask this question, I'm certain, that they won't be able to go back in and do a rescue treatment of any sort because the rescue treatment would need to be applied actually as a soil insecticide at planting. Have you looked at this, and do you think producers will be acceptable of that 10% risk in their field?
I think so, because what we've seen is when you look at the entire field, with Optum AcreMax 1, even though you have 10% of the plants that are refuge and not protected by the rootworm biotech trait, even so, the yield of that field through our studies is equal to the production of a field that would have had 100% BT corn rootworm protection. So that's an important piece of data that we've developed over the years that we've been studying this. And then secondly, all of the seed will be protected by soil, by insect seed treatment. So even though the refuge seed would not have a biotechnology component to it, it would still have a seed treatment component to it, providing that level of insurance.
And that seed treatment would be of what type?
We use both Poncho and Cruiser on our seed products.
And so is there any fear that, because those all operate on the same, I think, on the same type of chemistry, is there any fear that all the corn acres across the Corn Belt would be using the same treatment and that you would develop fairly quickly resistance in an insect population?
I don't think so. There are a number of different products in the marketplace, so one thing that will occur is that there will be varying chemistries used by companies throughout the industry. But then also, just as part of our own integrated pest management practices, we do watch very much whether it's a biotech trait or chemistries, whether any risk or actual resistance is occurring, whether it be with insects or weed resistance as technology continues to advance. So that is something that we watch very carefully.
Any final word before I let you go for the day, Mr. Schickler?
I really appreciate the opportunity to visit with you. Hopefully this information is helpful. Pioneer, as I mentioned, is very excited about what we can do to improve farmer productivity. Agriculture has a great opportunity here in the years ahead to help provide the world with increased productivity to meet the demands, but equally as important, food security, so that countries throughout the world can have security in their food, improve their economies, and therefore improve the well-being of their citizens, which ultimately leads to greater global security and less civil strife. We're anxious to play a part in that, and I think through the improved genetics that we can deliver, together with improved agronomic practices and biotechnology tools, we can accomplish that productivity improvement. So we look forward to the future.
Paul Schickler is the president of Pioneer Hybrid. It's a DuPont business. He joined us from just outside of Santiago, Chile, on The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a good afternoon.